Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you, as usual. And, Jim, we start with the good martini, and there are certainly very bad elements to this. And we're talking about the president's latest delay of the employer mandate, another year. The bad news, of course, is that this is a pretty lawless move, again, by the president unilaterally changing the law. And it provides additional and extended uncertainty for businesses, probably stifles hiring in some ways. But the good news, of course, is that employers and employees will get a reprieve here. And now it looks like all of this, unless he delays it again, will all come crashing down on Americans in 2016, which means whoever the Democratic nominee is, whether it's Hillary or somebody else, is going to have a lot more problems than they were hoping to have on their plate at this point.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that is good about this, I think probably the most optimistic take recently came from Charles Krauthammer, who said, look, this means that the employer mandate is never going to get enacted, which, you know, that may be a bit of a leap, but if it's this difficult to enact, is there going to be an enormous desire to see this enacted in 2016? I guess more specifically, will Hillary Clinton or whoever the Democratic nominee is want to see this implemented if it really is this giant headache and new cost for businesses? You know, Krauthammer interprets this as a de facto concession that it's not, it can't be administered in its current form, and that it's got to be drastically overhauled, and it's got to be, you know, changes have to be made to make it less of a hassle, less expensive to employers. Otherwise, it'll be a job killer. You throw this in with the CBO report, and all of a sudden, it just looks like this is one more bad aspect from Obamacare. The Obama administration has already taken quite a few lumps from trying to implement this law. How bad does something have to be for them to say, no, we can't touch that? In light of that, there's a chance that it won't come to fruition. I think the other thing, which is kind of interesting, you read, you know, the coverage in places like the Wall Street Journal, there are a lot of businesses that basically say, look, we just have no idea what the law is going to be. It changes any given day. I like the editorial board in the Wall Street Journal saying that there's a reason we call it Obamacare as opposed to the Affordable Care Act, and not just because it hasn't made a care affordable. It's that the law is whatever Obama wants it to be on any given day. And as a result of that, it sounds like a lot of businesses and HR departments and all the people who are supposed to administer these sorts of changes are just kind of throwing their hands up and saying, you know, we can't do this. And I guess the intriguing thing will be how many businesses don't comply with every little regulation and then assume that it'll be too complicated for HHS to enforce. And it'll be interesting. I mean, whether we are reaching a point where, you know, Obamacare is on the books, but it's so big and it's so complicated, the chances of it, the provision that you're violating being administered at any given day is worth it to businesses. And that's not the way laws are supposed to make. The whole point of laws, you're supposed to be able to know what the laws say and be able to understand them and be able to comply with them reasonably. And it's not meeting that test. So I think this is one more signal of, to use the other metaphor they like, was a Jenga tower. A very key part of the bottom pieces of wood just got removed and the whole thing started to wobble pretty seriously.
All right, on to martini number two now, the bad martini, and this could have easily been a crazy one as well. This is hat tip to NBC3 in Huntington, West Virginia, as well as MediaTrackers.org. Documents from an Ohio National Guard training drill conducted last January reveal the details of a mock disaster where Second Amendment supporters with anti-government opinions were portrayed as domestic terrorists. The Ohio National Guard civil support team training scenario involved a plot from a local school district where employees were using biological weapons in order to advance their beliefs about protecting gun rights and Second Amendment rights. And of course, Jim, they were getting their marching orders from a white supremacist leader. This is all fictional, of course. They had junior high school employees putting mustard gas in people's lunch. And they're quick to point out that there was a similar drill the year before involving left-wing terrorist scenarios that was ultimately ended up in an apology to local environmental groups. So you know what the scenario seems to be there. The quote from the police chief here is, "It's the reality of the world we live in. Don't forget there is such a thing as domestic terrorism. This helps us all be prepared."
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to Jesse Hathaway over Media Trackers Ohio, which has gotten the scoop on this. Kind of galling for a couple of reasons. One, you mentioned the environmentalists were complaining. Well, look, back in May of 2012, there were a group of five self-described anarchists, members of Occupy Cleveland, who planned on blowing up a bunch of bridges. This is what you call the Bane Initiative for fans of Batman. whenever you hear lefties complaining about the menace of right-wing terrorism, they often cite Timothy McVeigh, which was back in 1995, right? I mean, that's nearly 20 years ago. And so it kind of lingers this boogeyman of crazy right-wing extremists that are out to do these terrible things. By the way, I don't think they've ever been associated with, say, biological warfare and chemical weapons and these things in this scenario. But, you know, we do know, Greg, isn't there some group somewhere out there who's been interested in biological and chemical warfare and has pledged to kill Americans? It was run by a guy named Al, right? Al something. This is political correctness run amok. If they're really that offended by bothering anybody, like, oh, if we say it's Al-Qaeda, then the local Muslim groups will say that we're, you know, saying all Muslims are terrorists, which is not what they're saying. And in fact, if something terrible is going to happen in Ohio, you know, if there's going to be a terrible terrorist attack targeting Americans, Islamists seem like the likely suspect in this scenario. But if you're afraid, then call them the generic, you know, People's Front for Angry People. The fact that they're afraid of offending Muslim groups, but not afraid of offending Second Amendment advocates and groups like that, just kind of shows how insane this is. And this is a little bit of just runaway political correctness on the part of these organizers. And it's kind of, you know, surprised they're not more embarrassed by this. Now, look, I'm glad they're practicing for disaster scenarios. I hope they're good about that. But and then what I understand is, you know, the National Guard communications director, you know, the reporter says to him, look, trying to explain why this is bothersome to him. And you know, the guy says, well, it's not relevant to understand why conservatives may feel unduly targeted by the training scenario. And this is a great quote. OK, I'm going to stop you there. I'm going to quit this conversation, Sims concluded. You have a good day. So I salute him for his politeness to the end of the interview. But I kind of feel like this is, you know, look, it's our tax dollars that are paying for this guy's job. And I don't understand why he can't answer questions and why he's, you know, so snippy. Why do you pick this group as your representative terrorist when there are other ones that are way more plausible? I do remember some police station that had talked about radical homeschoolers taking over a school in one of these scenarios. And I remember thinking, well, if you're a homeschooler, why would you take over the school? You might as well just say it's an alien invasion or zombies. You know, pick something out that's not. And then, of course, you know, the zombified American Union group or something like that will be offended or something like that. But, you know, like, I mean, it really has gotten kind of ridiculous at this point that they do feel comfortable to target right wing associated or conservative groups, but not various other groups that, you know, experience has told us are much more likely to be involved in doing terrible things to kill lots of Americans.
Speaking of killing lots of people, it's not often on the Three Martini Lunch that we smile when we read stories of death. It has happened. Hugo Chavez comes to mind, Kim Jong-il, and et cetera, et cetera. This one definitely qualifies, and it also qualifies for the crazy martini. This version of the story, which has circulated widely the last 24 hours, is from the Daily Mail. A gang of 21 Iraqi militants accidentally set off their own car bomb as they were making a promotional propaganda video about a would-be suicide bomber. The explosion left all 21 dead and resulted in 24 arrests at the camp outside Samarra. A police officer said the militants were attending a lesson on making car bombs and explosive belts when a glitch set off one of the devices. Jim, I guess from that perspective, a glitch in a healthcare website might be a little better than a glitch in your suicide vest.
Puts it all into perspective, doesn't it? My understanding, Ace of Spades had a couple of good lines about this. One, they say, look, this is the feel-good story of the day. The headline, I'm envious of this style that they use over Ace. They said, look, an instructor blows away his students with his commitment to the profession of teaching and an accidental suicide bombing, but mainly the accidental suicide bombing is what blew them away. But let's think about it. I mean, there are a lot of lessons to be taken from this, Greg. I think it shows the dangers of social promotion. If you're a suicide bomber instructor and you're just not that good, you don't pass him along so that he can get into that job, okay? You know, you want to have qualified professionals teaching suicide bombing. You don't want to have these guys doing it willy-nilly because, you know, you could wipe out a whole bunch of these guys. And think about the careers cut short, Greg. These guys could have gone on to – well, mostly they could have gone on to blow themselves up. So really it's not like you can say, oh, they had such bright futures ahead of them. Think about it. I mean, if you're a suicide bomber, you work at it for years – well, you don't really work at it years and years. You kind of have a one-and-done sort of approach to your career. But really, any one of those guys could have someday been promoted to what is really the aspirational dream of a suicide bomber, which is to be the guy sending out the suicide bombers instead of the suicide bombers themselves. So we can yuck it up because it's fun and they're terrible people and they deserve to die. So,
yeah, they're on the wrong side of this. In case you're wondering, these are the people who are trying to destabilize the government there, which is not the greatest entity in the world, but it's certainly better than the people who are trying to root them out like Al-Qaeda. So,
folks, if you're an aspiring suicide bomber, don't take the cut right classes. You know, go out and find the best teacher you can find. This is not something you want to skimp on. So.
No cutting corners. Jim, on that lovely note, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.